We continue now with In the Moment. I am Lori Walsh, and a powerful new documentary looks at the aftermath of the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. It was filmed over the course of nearly 3 years, and it includes never-before-heard testimonies from parents, survivors, and first responders. Newtown is raw, and it's challenging, and it's heartbreaking. You can see it tonight on Independent Lens on SDPB-TV. And today, we welcome the film's director and producer, Kim Snyder. Welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you for having me.
Kim, this is an incredible film, and I know it's done very well on the film circuit and documentary filmmaking circles. Really something to watch. So first of all, just thank you. I was able to see it last night, and powerful stuff.
Thank you.
Let's talk about why now this the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary happened 14 December 2012, and for 3 years, some filming has been going on. Tell me about the process of bringing this, to Independent Lens now.
Sure. Well, we did, as you said, my producing partner and I spent 3.5 years making this film, and really very gently and slowly built trust within the community for some members of the community that felt it important to join forces with us and tell a story of something horribly historic. And sadly, that there's been way too many of these incidents since, none of the magnitude involving children of that age, thankfully. But we really felt it was important to capture a story we hadn't seen, which was really the aftermath of what an entire community looks like in the wake of such devastation. And we really wanted to tell it through a whole number of perspectives that may not always be heard from, including the local priest and the first responder who found himself first on the scene that day, and the teachers who survived, along with three families who lost loved ones.
And let's talk about the state trooper. I think his name is Sergeant Cario, if I have that pronounced correctly.
Yes.
And one of the things that he says, and this is what, as I watched this film, I kept just writing down what they said, these moments of their truth spoken on the screen. And he said, nobody needs to know specifically what we saw. Emotionally, the world needs to know. And you can see behind his words just the depth of the memory that he has still emblazoned in his brain. What was it like to sit across from him and the parents and really be in that space of grief with them?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that one, because that was, for me too, out of all the many hours, that what you just read was really the crux of my guidepost for the entire movie. Was not to do something that would re-traumatize or be prurient in any way and be respectful, but to honor a kind of mantra we heard early on, which is that they didn't want to just be remembered as a place of tragedy, but as one that created meaning in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, that interview was extremely powerful. Sergeant Cario was, along with so many of his first responder colleagues, so heroic that day, and felt that it was exactly what he said, that it's important for people to not be in denial about what this looks like. And I think sitting in that space of grief, what we did process-wise was that interview evolved out of an experiment, if you will. On the day of the first anniversary of the tragedy, one of the churches allowed us into their space, and we had a relationship with several of the churches in town, and we simply set up like a testimonial space in the base of the church, and after the service, just told them to spread the word that if anybody felt it was cathartic or cared to, they could bear witness. And in the very beginning, we would sometimes even leave the room and just have the camera there. But over time, it evolved into something more directed. And it was that interview in particular was really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Because collectively, both of us, there was a lot of trust there. We're exploring the boundaries of, you know, how far to go, what, you know, I certainly didn't want to censor people.
Right.
But there were a lot of things that I myself didn't really want to cross a boundary. So it was exploring together what was important.
You left time for the silent spaces between.
Yes. It was really important to me that this film not have recreations, not have a lot of bells and whistles, that it be very stark, very simple in a way, and it, because I really felt like what we were seeing was something rare. It sort of reaches into people's souls, and it, you know, it really shows them at a very raw, vulnerable, but also strong place, as we all know. I mean, those times of deep grief for us all also have that flip side of incredible strength, and I think that is what comes through in the film.
One of the fathers says early on in the film that he had this need to know what his seven-year-old experienced, and he was really struggling with that. He needed to know what those last few seconds were like. And instead of showing us as the viewer Daniel's last few seconds, you showed us his father and what his days and moments were like in relationships. Were like, is that part of the intention of that, to sort of take us? I mean, I really felt like I was in the documentary with them, listening to them right there.
Yes, I mean, it really is what's left in the wake. And of course, we do have beautiful memories by way of home videos of little Daniel and some of the others. But I think what we also intended, oddly enough, from people listening to this, but to also render a real sense of hope, because I think in watching people, human beings, move through the unimaginable, it's hard to imagine anything worse happening. And yet the sense of strength in Mark and, right. and the others, and the sense of community and how they have to find a way forward and to have each other's backs, I think is also offers a lot of hope and inspiration.
Tell me some of those ways that these parents, first responders, surviving siblings, community leaders are searching for meaning. Clearly, relationships is a big part of that, their relationships with each other.
Yes. What I witnessed and tried to convey in the film was an enormous amount of grace and dignity in how a community. I mean, really, it was redefining victim as an entire community. If you think of as community, as family, how does this family of people start to repair their social fabric, really, which is just shattered, as Father Bob says at one point, that the foundation was just cracked.
Right.
And, you know, what are the acts of beginning to see one another in their pain and support one another, and how difficult that is within families and within the community. And, you know, one of those illustrations in the film is parents who lost children and parents of those whose children escaped. As you can imagine, it's a very difficult gulf. And survivor guilt is pervasive, and the effects of that is something we saw and tried to also convey in the film.
How are families really trying to keep the memory of those children alive? One of the mothers, Ben Wheeler's mom, says, you know, can I just keep talking about Ben? You know, people ask her about herself or her other children, and she's like, well, I got to talk about Ben, too. She really has that sort of, you know, jubilant need to keep this, keep the conversation about this boy, you know, front and center.
Yes, I mean, I'm always quick to say that, like any town, I mean, Newtown's 28,000 people, and so it's 28,000 stories, and so there is no one story, and we tried to collect and render a few. But, you know, different people are finding meaning in different ways. So in the case of the Wheelers, for them, for me, the illustration, ultimate illustration of resilience in their case was the decision to have another child. And they do have this surviving son. So For others, it is trying to affect social change. And, you know, as David Wheeler says at one point, you know, there's just this natural human desire to want to protect the rest of the world from having to go through this. And I think that's really important to us because we wanted to break through this, deeply polarized political space that gun violence is also often placed in, and just, you know, realize these commonalities that everybody wants their families to be safe. Everybody can pretty much agree on that. And how we do it, I think, gets into more complicated territory. But really, that's why the film, I think, has a universal appeal in that way, because it does get through this lens of trauma and grief. And so for other families, it really varies. And I think therein lies the kind of illustration of resilience and what it looks like in each one of us.
And if you're just tuning in, my guest is Kim Snyder. She's a filmmaker, and the film Newtown airs tonight on South Dakota Public Broadcasting TV on Independent Lens. And Kim, there's a fair amount of sort of magical thinking and a self-awareness that's existing from parents who say things like, you know, when they hear a list of names read, maybe if my son's name isn't on the list, that he wasn't really killed. Or the mother who says, am I insane? Did he even exist? Struggling with the fact, was he ever here? Was he real? And then the other mother who says, or maybe it's one of the same ones, who travels and said, travel is easy because I can pretend that he's home. And then when I come home, I have to go through it all over again, realizing that he's not with us anymore. How did you get to that level? How did they get to that level of self-awareness, and how did you get to that level of honesty?
I think for some of them, the mechanism of the filming and the camera in some ways had some, I don't like to use the word healing because, but it had some properties of catharsis in some ways, I think. And, you know, we just built a kind of mutual trust of exploring what was important to talk about. And I think many of them share a desire to, as does the police officer you mentioned, to have the rest of the world understand the emotional devastation, even years out, of what this wreaks, and to take a look at ourselves as a society, and just try to figure out a way to prevent this from happening way more than it does anywhere else in the world. So, you know, I think that drove a lot of them to kind of have the courage to be that vulnerable, and. You know, it's. I think for each one of them, it was different. But it was, you know, for Nicole, I think she's a very goal-oriented person, and being able to have these kind of markers of leading me in a way to, she had this, you know, room of boxes that had been unopened of all the things that had been sent for her son, and you know, or the street that she actually lived across from the shooter, right across the street. So. She moved immediately after, but returning to that street was something she hadn't done in her small town, felt like that was held her back, that she didn't want to be afraid from driving in certain places. So there were these sort of markers and that would open up memories and the need to talk.
Were there things that surprised you, that were unexpected for you, moments that sort of hit you particularly strongly?
Wow. Well, so many. I mean, something that's just coming to me now. I was once sitting off camera with Father Bob in a diner, and there was a pregnant woman behind me, and he said, well, at least we're seeing that again. And I said, did you really see the birth rate go down in the first year? This was like 2 years in. And he said, yes. And so it made me think about, you know, how does one measure the barometers, of a deeply traumatized and a community that is just is sick with grief, basically. And, you know, how many other markers like that, whether they be substance abuse or all kinds of manifestations, you know, it just really makes you think about how important it is that we also address so many communities, including in urban centers, that deal with this kind of trauma from gun violence.
And you do such a fine job of capturing that moment with the family who does decide to have another baby, and they're approaching his first birthday, and the dad says, well, when was the last time we had a first birthday in this house? And he can barely get through thinking about that. So they need to put that child on the school bus and send him to first grade at some point in the future. They know that, and they're willing to go through that again.
Yeah, I think, as David has told me off camera a lot, they have to constantly live in a parallel reality of, you know, trying to allow joy back into their lives, moments of joy, but they're always standing side by side with these other triggers that can come at any time. So, you know, it's been humbling and an honor to share such like profound experiences and observations about just our human condition, basically.
Do they struggle figuring out how to talk to one another? I know in the beginning, one of the neighbors just, you know, her child survived, the neighbors did not. And she just didn't know, do we go over, do we? And this is a family that had pizza and dessert together almost every Friday night. Do they struggle now with those conversations when they sort of, you know, meet each other in town unexpectedly at the grocery store? And how do you get past that and open up and talk?
I think over 4 years in, there still is that. And people still sort of walk on tiptoes. And, you know, and I think it's probably common of a lot of victim communities like this that people become siloed in their grief. There are groups, there are teachers, you know, that are in a group. And, you know, I think it's all about sort of hearing one another in their pain. Different people had very different kinds of experiences. And as I said, survivor guilt. But I can say, not for everybody, but in some cases, I'm pleased that I think that the film and the sharing of it at times has been a bridge builder and has broken some ice that is, you know, makes it a little bit easier, actually. It might not be right for others, but I have witnessed that.
Right.
So that feels, you know, very rewarding.
Near the end of the documentary, there's this moment, the Daniel Barden Highland Mud Fest, and people are gathering to sort of, you know, do a race through the mud with some obstacles, and they have this creed that they all sort of pledge, and it's, do you promise to live life to its fullest? Do you promise to cherish family and friends? Do you promise to love, laugh, and enjoy this moment? And I think that sort of speaks to what they're trying to do as well as they march forward into life through the mud, as it were. What a great analogy.
Yeah, thanks. And we always tell people not to be afraid to watch it tonight. It's not graphic. And, you know, we think it's important and that it's most people find it rewarding. And that also, you know, we're trying to gather voices along with us to have a civil conversation and be community. And we're doing that through a website called newtownfilm.com. So people can learn more about what we're doing with the film, and if they want to try to host it in their own communities. It's really important in many different parts of the country, you know, where we see gun violence take its toll in very different ways in rural communities. It's often more often through suicide, which really constitute 2/3 of all gun deaths. So it's something that there's just so many different important ways to have a conversation about.
Newtown airs tonight on SDPB TV. It starts streaming tomorrow online. Kim Snyder, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.